You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Carter, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot. There he
is. He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the tree right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out of the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on his sideless knee, and we're talking moccasin and Joe. Grand party they're gonna have out in the St. John's Swamps. Sasquatch doing his brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Biscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Hi, brother. I want to spread a little bit of this tonight. Take a listen. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Gee whiz. You've got everything a man would want to see. You guys all heard about that. It was the biggest song back in the 60s. Revitalized back here during the presidential campaigns. But they had eyes that would hypnotize. I want to talk to you about that in a minute. I think that's a true saying, especially in our field, ladies and gentlemen. These creatures have eyes that could hypnotize. I know that I've been hypnotized for an excess of 4 decades. That's right, for those of you that don't know what that word means, that's over 40 years. Think about it. Some of you young pups haven't been on this Earth that long. But these creatures, I think my son says it the best, TJ, one of my sons. He says, when you have an encounter with one of these creatures and you see it one time, it'll be with you for the rest of your life. And I think that's happened to so many people in this industry, including myself, but especially the new people who've come along within the last 5 years, people who were doubting Thomas's, people who always said that these things never existed, and then all of a sudden they came on our expedition. The next thing you know, whammo, they see one of the creatures. They see its artifacts. They see what it's laid down in the ground, the footfalls. They'll hear them. They'll hear the rock clapping. They'll hear the tree knocking. And it goes on and on and on. The hypnotizing eyes. Bill, how are you?
I am doing good, Tom. I got a little bit of a lineup change tonight I need to tell you about. I don't want to surprise you.
Go ahead, Bill.
Let me go down the list. I got Lynn and Stan from Oregon, Mac from Tennessee, Bill Coffey, our good old SFPI compadre, Jim Dawson, Rocky from Arkansas. Taran is on. He's not listed, but Taran is going to be after Rocky. And then Anthony will dial in. He's a little late working tonight, but he's going to dial in. He's the last guest.
Well,
just so you got
like
all that. Sorry.
One hell of a cast on this evening.
Yeah. I'm doing good, Tom.
Did you have a great holiday weekend?
I certainly did. As you know, we put my mother and father to rest, and it was not a somber moment. It was about 150.
I'm glad to hear that, too. You know, because you
it was about 150 people out there dancing around and singing songs. And
isn't that a beautiful thing? Giving them a great
helping to dig the hole, the whole nine yards. I mean, everybody had a hand in the hole and the whole thing. It turned out to be a big celebration.
Isn't that wonderful? And, you know, that's what it should be for all people who are called back home and called to paradise. And that's what I call it. That's wonderful. Bill, I'm glad to hear that. That's
oh, yeah.
An awful lot. You know, it really does.
How you doing? Are you handling?
Don't even ask.
Yeah, no.
That's okay. You know, we're going to get through this also at the same point in time. I got to tell you this. There have been reports after reports after reports. I've told everybody this is the migrational period. It's the migrational time. You know, we've had this inconsistent weather. And my God, with its devastation hitting across the country, and you know, some states have been unscathed, some haven't, and it's just terrible. It's from the loss of life, from the tornadoes, the torrential rains. I mean, large bridges caving in. I mean, God, what is next? But
yeah.
You know what? What must be going through the minds of these creatures when a tornado hits? Are they smart enough that they can sense that the weather's going to change and they go underground? Are they smart enough to move out of the way? Think about that. Ponder on that for a while. Bill, I've got to tell you, I mean, we have been hitting some stuff that's been off the charts. I mean, you know, I don't go well with humidity, but I'm doing it. I don't go well with the ticks and the chiggers, but I'm doing it.
Yep.
And I'm doing it for a reason. I'm doing it for our quest. I'm doing it for all the people that are associated with us. You know, somebody asked me a question just yesterday and said to me, Tom, you know, there's a lot of people who think they're in the industry, but we know different. And then there's a lot of people who think that others aren't in the industry, but they are. Now, if you can make any sense of what I just said, ladies and gentlemen, I guess what people are saying out there is, hey, you know, we watch this TV show that comes on Sunday, and all we're seeing is a lot of shadows. We're seeing people chase shadows. We're seeing footprints in the ground. We're hearing vocalizations, and we're hearing other people's stories. But how come they can never find a creature? Well, here's my answer, and I'm not sticking up for these other people on TV. But here's my answer, in a nutshell. I think what you need to do is go out on an expedition. And I'm not talking about one in your office or your living room or your bedroom in front of a computer screen. And see for yourself, okay? When you see how quick these creatures are, when you see how elusive they are, and see how they move through the woods, wow, I'm going to tell you, you'll have a second thought on the reason why we can't capture these things. Ponder that for a while. And discuss it later on tonight when we have that discussion. I guess it's about 10 minutes towards the end of the show. So let's get out to our listeners around the globe. I think we're going up here to Oregon. We're going to talk to Lynn and Stan. Lynn, Stan, you guys out there?
Yes, I am.
Well, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good today. Stan's incapacitated today, but I'm doing pretty good.
Okay, I hope it's not a bad incapacitation.
No, it's blood sugar.
Okay, a lot of people have diabetes in this world. Stan,
yes, they do.
One. Okay, listen, I recollect now. You're the gal that was up there where you guys fall trees, right?
Yes.
Okay. Explain to my listeners around the globe what you guys had experienced, because I remember your story now. It was quite interesting.
Well, that was Stan's story. I wasn't with him on that one. I was a non-believer, really, until 2004 in August, about a three-quarter moon on the waning moon. And I was up at 2:30 in the morning because I had to go potty. And, of course, we live in the woods, so it's outside. And I saw what I thought at first was a man, and then I thought, that can't possibly be a man. It's way too tall. There's no over 7 foot people here. And I thought, gee, his sweats, because it looked like he had a hood on, are funny. They're matching colors, and it was black. You know, the creature was black, and it was graceful. And I was so frightened, I stepped back in out of the light of the mill shed and held my breath as I watched it walk across the mill yard for probably 140 feet. And the grace of this creature, I mean, I'm sure it was aware I was there, but no fear. No fear at all. I didn't know what to think. I went back in and I woke Stan up and I said, I can't explain. I was shook up. I was shaking. I was absolutely frightened. I forgot I had to go to the bathroom. And he said, no, you didn't see that. You saw what you think you saw. And I said, how do I explain this? You know, I mean, do I tell someone? Are they going to think I'm crazy? You know, he didn't. Thank God he was there, because otherwise I don't know what I would have said to who, and I was so scared because this thing was just like nothing I've ever seen, you know, and I knew it was huge and powerful, and he was completely black. And unlike the sketches and stuff I've seen on TV and all that with the, he was anatomically correct as far as the length of his arms, you know, which were long, but he had really long legs, probably as big around as the trees in most people's yards. And when I checked it out the next day to see approximately how tall, walking past the mill shed, this guy would have to be, Stan and I measured and figured it was about 8.5 feet from where I stood. 8.5 feet tall, and I know he had to weigh over 400 pounds, and he was graceful. And I say he because I got the impression it was a male. You know, whatever it was male, just by the way it moved and the shape of its body. And I had good light to the three-quarters of the waning moon, and I call it a Bigfoot moon now, because that seems to be when I have experienced contact or sightings and the feelings and knowing they're there watching.
Let me ask you a question, Lynn. How did
yes.
you guess the weight of 400 pounds?
At that height, compared to the mill shed and the distance I was, Stan and I did a little bit of math, you know, and figured, you know, this guy, his legs had to be as big around as my, you know, almost as big around as my waist. And for as long as they were and as tall as he was and the way he moved, it's like I could almost feel weight in the ground, you know. And I know it had to be more than 400 pounds for that height because
how big is
he
your
was.
Weight?
My waist now is about
you're sharing a lot of intimate things with us. You said that
yeah.
you had to go out and go to the bathroom in the woods. And
well, yeah, that's what I was doing
woods.
Outside.
Right.
At, yeah, 2:30
so
in the morning, you know. My waist is about 30 inches now.
At the time when you saw this thing?
No, my waist was about 28 inches at the time.
Okay, so you gained a couple of inches. We all do that as we get older, Lynn.
So
you're saying 28 inches, and you're saying it's an average size of somebody's tree in their backyard, each leg. Is that correct?
Yeah, they look like tree trunks. And he was just, his fur, you know, it must have been fur. It just sort of swallowed up the light from the moon. It was like he blended in with the shadows in the background and, you know, what dark there was, and yet he still shined in the moon. I don't know how to explain it.
Okay. Have you had any encounters since then?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. Stan and I had one together up here at a popular place where people go to ride off-road vehicles and et cetera. We were up there one night, and it was a misty night. It was probably April, I would say. About midnight, we had a campfire going. Stan was armed because something hit something out in the woods. It was a loud thump is what I felt first, and it something about it startled me. And, of course, Stan got, you know, up in arms about it because he doesn't like this woman to be frightened, and, you know, he's had experiences. And then we proceeded to... I took a picture, but it was such a poor picture. It was a disposable camera in the direction that I heard the sound. I took two pictures, as a matter of fact.
How long was this, Lynn?
How long ago? This was in 2007, I believe it was.
Oh, okay. Well, Wait a minute. The first encounter was 2000 what?
2004. I remember that because it was before my mother passed.
Okay, so now we came up 3 years, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have anything more recent besides the one that Stan had recently?
No. No, not really. Not since this one. We were together when this one happened, you know, and it happened just very close to us here.
Okay. So here's my question is what I'm going to tell you. Is number
mm-hmm.
one, the one that you've seen... The first one, which was really indelible, and we all get to remember that one, just like
right.
I.
Right.
Okay.
I'm
having a hard time understanding, Lynn. Something 8.5 feet tall, 8 feet tall, and with tree trunk legs, as you're saying, about 28 inches around each. That's huge. I think it's
yeah.
more than that, is what I'm trying to tell you. I think it's more than 400 pounds.
Well, yeah, see, I don't weigh. I think, you know, I still think I'm a thin princess, but, you know.
And I like that. Most women do. Listen.
I'm happy with
it. I want you, did you ever get to see a lair where these creatures live or they stay in temporarily as they're migrating?
No, I never have. If I have, I may not have recognized what it was. You know, in the woods because it would blend in so well. And, you know, I'm capable of building shelters out of branches and little trees and stuff that, you know, and fir and pine boughs on the top to keep water out.
You're talking my lingo, sweetheart, but let me ask you something. When you build them, do you use a knife, a saw, or an axe?
I use a machete.
Oh, there you go. Well, that I'll call you my machete girl. And the reason why I'm talking about layers right now, ladies and gentlemen, is because we're going to be getting into this next segment that's going to blow people's minds. I want you to take real close call to what's going to be said here in this next segment, sweet Lynn. And I want you to start looking for those things, especially tell Stan when he's feeling better, when he's not incapacitated, I think was the word you used, right?
Right, right.
And I hope he's feeling a lot better. But just mute yourself out. I want you to listen to what's coming down the pike here in these next three or four calls. I'm going to have them all come on individually, and then we're all going to talk together. I think you're going to be quite amazed, okay?
Yes.
All right, sweetheart. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing a little bit of your evening with us tonight.
Well, thank you.
Just mute yourself out because people may have some questions for you at the end.
I got you muted, Lynn.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. Let's go to commercial real quick, Bill.
Here we go.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And we're back, Tom.
Thank you, Bill. Ladies and gentlemen, that has a special place in my heart, Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. If you haven't seen it, download it on Netflix, buy it on our website. It's the whole story behind the scene of the real story, what happened. Not this crap that's put on the internet, but you'll see the macabreness, the sickness, like I just said to Megyn Kelly and Fox News, these people were the law. That's the thing that really irks me more than anything. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go back out here to Mississippi, and the reason why we're going to really vocalize tonight on Mississippi and talk about it in detail is because we were invited by a Native American guy named Theron. We met some beautiful people out there. And announced to myself and the crew that I had brought out there, we had been there a couple of three times, maybe four. I can't remember anymore because there's been so many places all over this continent. But this time that we went out, I've been plagued with calls. I've been plagued with emails. I've been plagued with people saying to me, Tom, why won't you expound on it? Tell me what's going on, okay? And that's the reason why I'm calling for this show tonight, and the people who were there firsthand, who had seen what we had seen, what we had countered for those days, those multiple days that we'd been there. I think the best thing to do is to set the stage. I'm going to take it out of order just a little bit because I'm going to have them all on at the same time. I want to bring, you said Theron is here?
Yes, he is.
Theron, if you are out there, please chime in with us right now.
I got to unmute everybody, Tom.
Well, okay, then,
I'm going to get, here's what we got. I got Rocky, Swede, Bill, and Jim.
Thanks.
Everybody's on.
Okay, thanks. All right, Theron, are you on the line?
Oh, yes, I'm right here.
Well, first of all, good evening, and thanks for at late notice joining in. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Native American that I was talking about that invited us to the reservation, the Choctaw Mississippi Reservation. It's a town small but large in its own by the volume it does at their casinos next to a town called Philadelphia, Mississippi. So if you use it in your GPSs, it doesn't even go on your GPS, but the town of Philadelphia does. But this is the gentleman that called us out on the activity that was going on out there on his family's land and other people's land on the reservation. I'm going to ask questions of you and the other people who were on the show with us and who were out there who had experienced everything that we had experienced, Theron. I hope you don't mind.
Oh, I don't mind. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Ladies and gentlemen, we had our crew out there, and this gentleman was proceeding to take us to the area in the back of his mom's house where a lot of stuff was going on. Prior to that, he was telling us the story about, oh, my God, here is where the creature crossed the road and had a dead deer on its shoulder. I told everybody at that point in time, stop. They had no idea where we were going and what we were going to do. We proceeded to go out where I thought would have been a right trail, a game trail, where something had gone in. And we had gone into this little ravine, ladies and gentlemen. As we were going up this little hill, down in the ravine, I saw something to the left that was like camouflaged area to the left hill. And at that time, Jim Dawson had taken the point. Jim, you on the line with us?
I am, Tom. Good evening.
Good evening to you. At that point in time, when I asked you to take, since you had taken the point, and I ask you to take a look over there to your left, tell everybody around the globe exactly in your words what you saw.
Well, prior to that, I'd found a couple of blinds up by the road, and I was really excited. And when you pointed out the area up on the knoll from us up to the left, I ran up there, and I couldn't believe what I saw. There was actually a blind there, and then I looked down at the ground, and I saw broken pine branches that had been laid out as if it was sleeping there. Something was sleeping or laying down on it. And what was interesting about the blind, it was a pine limb, a huge pine limb with deciduous leaves woven into it. It couldn't have fallen that way. It was clearly made. And then there were huge logs arranged in a circle around that area and then in another area, almost like an observation area. It was incredible. And I yelled down to you, Tom, you got to get up here and see this. This is amazing.
Okay. And so as you saw and as you just told our audience around the globe, and I have only, ladies and gentlemen, in excess of 40 years, have probably only seen about three layers in my life, and that's around the United States. This one was still fresh. This one was built incredibly. And now at this point in time, I want to bring out a guy to me is like a junior arborist, a guy that was in the tree falling business, excavation business of trees and brush and things all over the Central Valley, Bill Coffey. Bill, you on the line?
I'm here, Tom. How are you?
I'm well, and thanks for joining us, Bill. And your other brethren are happy that you're on the line with us also. Bill, because you've done so much in the woods with trees and the brush, and you fall so much of it, you had a company that done it. Explain what you saw in your terminology on this lair.
This tree that had fallen was a natural fall, rotted, old wind, whatever the circumstance was. It wasn't something that was man-made done or fallen. It's all wind, whatever, you know, rotted. And a pretty good-sized pine tree, you know. And the deal with the pine trees, these pine trees are in the area that off the branches, the limbs, the needles face up. So this tree had fallen down, so all these needles that are on the bottom side should be facing up. Well, all these branches that were broke off were needles facing down. You know, limbs were broke off, and they were placed. You know, some of them are going to be, the ones that from the top that fell and broke are going to be face down, needles facing down, but the ones on the bottom should be facing up. So then these branches are all placed, you know, needles facing down. And the way they were broke off was, yeah, when they hit the ground, they're going to break. But the ones that were on top of the tree that didn't hit the ground were, you know, broke not by an axe, chainsaw, or, you know, saw blade or anything. They were snapped, and, you know, they were probably as big around as a man's wrist or forearm. You know, they're just snapped. And they're green. And when they're dry, they'll break, but these are all green.
Exactly. Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to listen very closely now to what Bill just described to you, okay? So my question to you is, can a human being take something as big as a human's arm, a male's arm, and break those things off when they're green or twist them the way these things were, yes or no?
No. No, you can't. You go out to the forest and find a branch that big on a tree that's, you know, off the ground. Jump up there and hold on to it with your body weight. And you know, it'll just bend. You know, they're meant to withstand that. No, you can't break them.
And thank you for your observation. Thanks for the points well made. Stay right there. Okay, I'm going to push the button on you. Just stay right there because I'm going to call you back to what's going to happen. Now I'm going to go back now to my brother Mac. Mac, you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Mac, thank you for joining us. When you saw...
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Now, Mac is a part of the local flavor there. He's a Caucasian, a white boy, who works on the reservation, but has become, I think, an honorary Choctaw. Would you say that, Theron?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Those of you who didn't hear Theron, he said, oh, yes. That's good. So...
Well, I got a great-grandpa that was Cherokee, so that's me a little bit.
Okay, now get closer to your phone now so we can hear you because you're kind of echoing a little bit. So I hope you're not on a speaker. So here's the deal. When you saw what we saw for the first time, what went through your head?
When I saw the lair that you discovered, even Jim discovered, I had never seen a tornado make a tree like that. I've never seen anything like that before because it was just so strangely made. It was just an odd way of making a tree break up so high. And then it was so long, and then you had fresh needles and stuff and logs that kind of and big limbs that made a like a big bed, like they were protecting children or something. I thought that was strange.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're following this story. You find this lair. It's Jim. It's Bill. It's myself. Was Youngblood with us then, guys?
No.
No, it's just three.
No. No. Just all three.
Okay, all right. Because the Ron was up on the other hill there by the rig. I remember this. All right. We decided to bait the area, set up the trail trip cameras, get rid of our stink, and come back the next day, ladies and gentlemen. Okay? Now, I want somebody to tell the story, and I think, Bill, you could probably tell it better than anyone, is how we baited the trees and what we baited them with. Would you be so kind?
Yeah, we baited them with our Tom Biscardi famous Bigfoot enticing bait, sardines and peanut butter.
Yep.
And Tom swore by all these years, and we've just lived with it. We just gone with it. It seems to work.
It seems to work. Now, here's the thing. How high up, Bill, did you put those cameras, and how high up did we bait?
Well, we said bait at starting about 6-7 feet, but about height, our height, Jim, you and I are all the same height, 6 foot high, Jim's a little taller. And then we reached up, so we were up. The highest point is with your arm up to 7.5 feet, 8 feet with a knife. So we baited between 6 and 8 feet high.
Fantastic.
We smeared peanut butter on the bark and cut notches in the bark and stuck whole anchovies in there. Sardines.
You got your memory really good. I'm proud of you. Now, here's the thing. How many bait stations and camera stations did we put together?
We put, we set up four cameras and baited three trees in the center of that so we could get any angle coming from the back, any angle.
Let me hold you fast right there. Ladies and gentlemen, did you hear what he said? We baited the area in the center, and we had our cameras strategically placed to capture whatever side and angle these creatures would walk in. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, consider yourself real lucky because a lot of stuff we're talking about tonight is confidential. I thought it deemed it best that we tell the truth and let you people do it because there are some people, real true Bigfoot enthusiasts and researchers out there, and this may be of some help to you. All right. So, Bill, after you set the cameras, okay, after we all baited the stations and we left.
Right.
We had never been there before. Is that correct?
No, never been there before. We went on, Thrawn was telling us a story about a lady that was driving up the road in the dark and the story about the deer on the shoulder. And, you walked around and found a spot that looked like a game trail. We were close and we walked in there. We walked out. We've done this before. We've set cameras in areas where people have seen it, and come back the next day and, got pictures of a deer or a possum or a raccoon or something,
Okay, all right. Hold fast right there. Ladies and gentlemen, we went out to other areas. We did what we had to do. Went and got some shut-eye. We come back the next day. Jim Dawson.
I'm here.
What happened when we came back the next day?
The trees were licked clean.
Well, that's great. Wait a minute. I love the analogy of Mr. Coffee. Bill, be so kind to tell me in your own language, because I never heard that before in my life, what you said.
The damn tree looked like it was power washed.
It was amazing.
And ladies and gentlemen, that's his exact words that came out of his mouth then that you just heard right now. And yes, he is correct.
We were all dumbfounded.
We saw all of that. Now, you got to understand, Jimmy, how much did we lather up that tree with peanut butter?
You got mad at me because I put too much peanut butter on there. Bill did. Remember, we were just about to run out, and I said, hell, let's put it all on there. I smeared a whole jar of peanut butter on each tree.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to be seeing some of this in our new movie, Pursuit, because it was phenomenal, okay? But you know the coup de grace and the icing on the cake was when we took the game cameras and we brought it back out of the ravine. We had to hook it up to our computer. And what did we find, Bill?
We got a picture, a silhouette of a creature walking past. This camera that took the picture was set lower than the layer than the other ones. It was kind of a strategically way to set the cameras. Mm-hmm. And this thing walked right by the camera. I mean, we got a picture of the shoulder and the head. So, and I, I stood and I set that thing at almost 8 feet high, as high up as I could reach, and we got a picture of the shoulder and the head, a silhouette.
Here's my question. Estimation, size of this creature. What do you think it was? The size.
I know where I set the camera. I know how far up I can reach. So it went. It was so close to the camera that when it flashed, it silhouetted. That's a walk right by the camera. So it wasn't a 15 or 20 feet away. So we know it had to be at least 8 feet tall. And, you know, it's a silhouette. So, I mean, you know, you think of a basketball player, 7 feet tall, weighs 350 pounds. So this damn thing at 8 feet tall and, you know, fast body fat to live off, you know, that's got to be 500-600 pounds, I think.
You bet. Now, hold on. Hold fast one more time, please. Jim, Mac, and Theron, what did I decide to do that same day? Don't everybody talk at once, or are you trying to recollect? You need a hint?
I think you're really happy. You were jumping up and down with joy, you know. That's all I remember when you saw the picture.
Okay, well, I did that too. I did that too. I called Fish and Game. I called the police department with your help. I also called the radio station with Mac's help, and called the TV station and the newspaper, which you can go on our website searching for Bigfoot.com and see the article, and you'll see the whole team that was there. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
now,
the newsreel is on your site, too.
Yes, the newsreel is on the site also, and thank you for that. Here's my big beef on this whole thing, ladies and gentlemen. And you know, there's this guy named Flycatcher. He said it's a blob cat, a blob squatch, no doubt. I don't know who you are, Mr. Flycatcher, but I'll tell you what, I'll invite you out next time we're there. And I want, when you see it, I want you to tell me it's a blob squatch, okay? Because we know better. A lot of people can talk story, but there's not many of them can live the story as we all did. The reason why I'm bringing this out tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is because I think, honestly and truly, we got a bum rap and a bum deal. What do I mean by that? Bill Coffey, who had my back and has his team members back, as they have his back, went back for 7 days, I think it was. Was it 7 or 5 days, Bill?
Yeah, about 10 days.
10 days, excuse me. And he was so sure that we were going to get one of these creatures. I was at a different location, but he was there, and he had Mac there, and he had Theron there, and there was a couple other people locally. But all of a sudden, ladies and gentlemen, we had Fish and Game out there. Fish and Game blew their minds. They could not believe what they saw. They freaked out. Is that not correct, Theron?
Well,
right.
You know, you didn't tell the people that we saw the video of the creature that my cousin Navian took, and we all studied it, and we all decided it was not a black bear, because black bears aren't red, or brown, rather, or reddish-brown. Anyway, I understand that Fish and Game camped out a whole week in that area to try to capture its image, or to try to capture it, or whatever, but they were there, and they were actually trying to probably catch it or whatever, but Fish and Game wasn't, you know, they were two-faced to us, you know.
That's my whole point, and I'm just learning this for the first time, ladies and gentlemen, that they had camped out there for a week to try to capture one of these things. Mac, did you know that?
I knew they had put out some cameras, and they said they did not get a thing.
Wait a minute. You answered the question. Bill, did you know this?
No, that's what I heard Thrawn just say the story. I was shocked because when I went back after we left, I mean, when we walked in there, there was a sort of a game trail, but when I went back, it looked like something, looked like a trail that somebody had put up going to the top of Mount Whitney, something like that. It looked like a marked trail. I mean, it would just trample down, and there's been more than just us back in there. There was a lot of people. So now it makes sense why it looked like that from what Thrawn's story, they camped back in there.
Okay. Well,
can I jump in there?
Please do, Matt.
Okay. Farun and I walked down that trail before Bill came. We walked down just a little ways to make sure that the fire control burning didn't affect that area. Then I said, Farun, let's stop right here. Don't go any further. I don't want to touch it. So we walked back single file, and we did not try to mess up anything. But it's just like a day or two later, it looked like a herd of horses had gone down through there. But by the way Bill talked, you know.
Yeah, that's you're right, Matt. That's what it looked like. When I went back, you and I went back then, it looked like it had been pretty well trampled down, you know.
Well, there's a reason why I'm going into this story, ladies and gentlemen, and you crew guys. The third day when I came back, I called Fish and Game. I forget the guy's name, and I'm not going to even honor him if I did know it. And he says to me, gee, Tom, you've got to take me down from your website. I can lose my pension. I can lose my job. And we were there yesterday, and we burned the area out. I proceeded to call Matt. I proceeded to call Theron and all my other fellow compadres. The moral of the story, ladies and gentlemen, this is the first time I knew about this, them camping out and putting cameras out, number one. Number two, they never burned that area out, even a year later. Is that correct, Theron?
Down at where my mother's, the fire didn't get that close because it's in close proximity to the house, you know. So, yeah, that lair is probably still there, you know.
Okay, so that was a false statement made to me from Fish and Game then, wasn't it?
It probably was for some reason or another, people in the higher-ups, you know what I mean, decided that they wanted to keep that creature protected from people who may want to harm it. And that was the story I got, these people are coming here to capture our creature and take it away and all that, you know. It's just a lot of different kind of stories that I heard, you know, and to tell you the truth, the Choctaw people here living on the Choctaw Reservation are concerned about it, and I think it was the consensus of the people that made them sway those people as they did sway and turn their cheek the other way from what they did in the beginning. They sounded like they were with us, these things need to be studied. They need to be protected. If one can be captured, you know, it can be captured and studied and, you know, whatever you can do. But the big thing about the creatures here, and it's a consensus that people need, the creatures need to be protected here. We're still getting sightings and we're still getting encounters here. And my mother, where the creature usually comes, to my mother's house, and she's hearing all these low guttural growls and high pitched screaming and fee knocking still. And I visited her yesterday, and she said, "Oh, the other night, you know, around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, I heard this low guttural growl and high pitched screaming, you know, and sounds coming out of the woods like the branches were knocking on the trees and all that stuff, you know, like that." So, the creatures are still around, and they're around in the proximity of a radius of about 10 miles, you know. We're still getting sightings.
Okay, well, hold on. We'll get to that.
Months ago.
I want to stay focused on what we're doing here, okay?
All right.
All right. Rocky, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, Rock.
Hey there. How's everybody doing?
Good, good. Rocky, ladies and gentlemen, is a man of few words, but I'll tell you what, his actions back up everything that he does say. I had asked Rocky to come down and assist Bill. How many days are we down there? Three?
I believe they kind of ran together. I'm not sure how many days I was down there.
Okay. And let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen, about Rocky's skills. This man cut trail where trail was not. This man has the experience and lives amongst the creatures. He lives amongst nature. He takes from the woods to eat for he and his family. And he walks amongst the creatures, period, end of report. Him and Swede, both. I had him go out there to assist Bill, in which Bill so reverently put this whole thing in motion. Bill, you were there, you said about 10 days?
Yeah, 10 days.
Okay. And he was under the total supervision of Bill, and he saw some stuff, but nothing of real circumstance. Then he had to get back and do his own stuff, which was great. At the same point in time, the night before Bill left, would you call that a warning, a threat? What would you call that, Bill?
Yeah, I think somebody would just probably mix the notions of, yeah, they'd like it to happen, and, but, you know, like Thrawn said, the consensus of the people of the reservation, they wanted to protect it, and they know that I was carrying a weapon, and so I guess they warned me that, you know, I shouldn't be on the reservation with a weapon. But, you know, it was more said than that, but that's all, Father. I want to go with it right now.
Yeah, of course, and I understand. But at the same point in time, Thrawn, by us people, meaning SFBI and their crew and family, we were invited by you. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, right. There's nothing wrong with me inviting you to come do your research. You know, it's just that when weapons come into question, that's against the tribal law, and plus many older elderly, one of our people, you know, that know that these creatures exist, and they've known that these creatures exist from time immemorial, and they would like for it. They say they're protectors of the people and all that stuff, you know. And I grew up in a big city, you know, so I'm not too much into Native American beliefs, but I believe in this. I believe in what they say because I know that these creatures exist. I had my own sightings back in 1972, and my mother and nieces and my sister have seen the creatures many, many times over the years. So I have no doubt that these creatures exist. And when people say, the elderly people say, these are our brothers and our sisters and all that stuff, our spiritual guides and all. You know, I've heard that talk for many years, and I just dismissed it, but I'm beginning to believe it, you know.
Well, listen, you need to go on. Belief is built on promises and what happens in the past. You know, I've said this in the beginning. You know,
yeah.
I touch it, I feel it, I see it myself, it's there. If I don't, and I'm listening to someone else, and my mother, God rest her soul, she's up there in heaven looking down at all of us right now. She used to say to me, believe half of what you see and nothing what you hear, okay? So the name of the game is this, and I want to ask you this publicly, Theron. If the Choctaw people want to know and study these creatures, how do you think someone is supposed to do it?
Well, you can have someone like me invite you to come over, and there's nothing wrong with that. And, we have to be involved in it, you know, like me and Mac, you know, locals, you know, to show the people that we are involved in it as well, and we would portray some confidence to the people, you know, that we're doing something right, like doing research and trying to show the world that these creatures do exist.
Let me oppose you with a different question, because I'm not getting the right answer here. The people of the reservation now, your fish and game, are they heavily pursuing a capture or a study of these creatures, yes or no?
I believe they aren't. I understand that they camped out and tried to capture the image and all that for themselves, you know. And I thought that was kind of cheating, you know, because we started this, and here they're telling me that it's what I saw on the video is a black bear. And here, and this man, and I won't mention his name, he said, it's a black bear, but he goes out there and camps all week, you know, to try to get the fame for himself, or whatever you may call it, you know.
Well, you know, I'm still not hearing the right verbiage here. I think what I'm asking you, real simple, and I'll just come out and ask you.
Yeah.
Do you know for a fact, yes or no, yes or no answer, that the people of the reservation, including the Attorney General's office, including Fish and Game, including local police on the reservation, have a current agenda to either capture, fall, or retain one of these creatures, yes or no?
I don't know.
Okay, you don't know. Then thank you for the answer. I should have said yes before. I don't know.
I just know that you guys are welcome to come back and
Well, let me ask you this. You say we're welcome, but who's going to guarantee our safety, not in the woods, but against the people of the reservation?
Oh, yeah. Well, you have a lot of people here on the reservation that will back you up, because we have a lot of people on the reservation that has had the encounter and sightings as well, you know. So they get really excited when you guys show up, you know.
And we know that. Thank you. A lot of it was because of you and Mac. I'm going to tell you straight up, Mac has become a part of our family. like we think you are, and I hope you are. I haven't talked to you in a while, but I talk to Mac at least once a week. And I've got to tell you straight up, we would love to come back. You know, I talked to Jimmy today. I talked to Bill today, and I talked to Rocky yesterday. And, you know, but we would need a guarantee that we have total amnesty on the reservation under the laws that you guys have, and that...
One of the things is that you just can't have weapons out of hunting season.
I totally understand that, but at the same point in time, what's wrong with any of my guys, including myself, out in the brush to have a weapon to protect ourselves? You know what's out there this time of year?
Yeah, I understand what you're talking about. But what I'm saying is, if any one of our people are with you, there's no harm, you know?
Okay, so...
I can say, come on over, and we're out there doing our research. And here they come, and they say, "What are you guys doing?" We just say, "Hey, listen, we're doing our research, and there's no law against that."
So, am I understanding what you're trying to tell me right now? That SFBI, Tom Biscardi and his crew would be welcome to come back there.
Oh, sure.
To do the research on their land. A sovereign nation, which they control, and is not recognized by the government of the United States of America. And if we do find one of those creatures, we would share and sign a testimonial to the fact that if we did find one of these creatures on their land, we would share it with them. Would that be possible?
We want you to show the world that these creatures exist, but we'd like to capture it and study it.
Okay, well that's a great means. Now, how would you capture it?
Did you see
the movie King Kong?
Yeah, you have a lot of, you know, you had maybe. One of those darts, you know, that drugs them, makes them go to sleep. Maybe a cage, some kind of cage that you can put food in, and they'll go in and get it, and then they'll get locked in and all that stuff, you know.
Okay, you're just fishing out there, and I can understand why.
Yeah.
Theron, and I appreciate you, and I'm no disrespect intended, please.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to tell you is this. If I had a written agreement on the stationery from the tribe, from the chairman of the tribe, is it still a female?
Yeah.
What's her name?
Phyllis J. Anderson.
Okay. She's got a great name. It's an American name.
Well, she's
she's got a beautiful home. We passed by that. Mm-hmm. So if we had something signed by her or the assistant chairperson, stating that we were welcome, we had amnesty, and that everything that we would find, we would share with them 50-50, we'd come back in a heartbeat.
Oh, sure. Okay, well, you need to talk to the Attorney General there.
Well, why don't you set the stage for us?
Okay, well, I'll do whatever I can do, you know. I am in this as you are.
But at the same point in time, I do know, Theron, that you wanted to take our fines that we had gotten and gone to council and petition council for funds. Is that correct?
I don't know anything about that.
You don't?
Okay. But,
all right.
Yeah. it just may, we might strike up something, you know, it's, you know, for scientific expeditions, you know.
Well, we're totally indebted to you because you're the one that brought us there.
Yeah.
But at the same point in time, I hope that your loyalty, your tribe's loyalty, is to myself, my team, and my company.
Well,
because I want the world to know, and I'm making it publicly known right now, that the Choctaw Indians did not pay for our food, did not pay for our travel. The only time that we were ever treated so beautifully was through Mac Jackson, his connection, and he what he, you know, did for us when we were there this last time. And I'm not saying that you didn't do anything for us, Theron. You brought us there. You were the main man, okay? And we respect you. We still respect you to the nines. I hope to God that you could break the barrier and share our thoughts with council to make this happen, because we know what's out there as you know what's out there. But the difference between you and I and the people who are on the land who are trying to do it, they do it as a maybe, a possibility. We know for sure what we can do.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, there's a group called the Native American Paranormal Society that's been trying to get a hold of me here in the past couple of weeks here, and I haven't talked to them yet. And then last year sometimes a friend of mine said that somebody with the Monster Quest called and wanted to get a hold of me, but I never did call him back, you know. Because at the time I told him, my loyalty is with searching for Bigfoot.
Tom, and you know what? I appreciate that. Who just tried to come in there? Just said, hey, Tom.
Me. Matt.
Yeah, Matt, go ahead.
I've had people tell me that paranormal and monster, I'm not going to call it names, TV show people are trying to get in touch with me. But I want everybody to know right now, nationwide, they had their chance. Tom Viscardi is my man. He's the one I'm going to go to. He gave me a chance, and he'll give anybody a chance. Now, back up. I don't think it's just the whole wildlife, game, and fish. I think it might be just one or two. Now, all the people, most of the people don't even know what's going on about this situation. And besides that, I want to get across, that lair that you found, that you guys found, and the one that I found, they were not very far from people's houses. People think you got to go to the back country to find these things. You don't have to go to the back country. They were right behind people's homes, not too far.
That's true. It's exactly, every word that came out of your mouth is true. And ladies and gentlemen, the both layers that Mac just talked about is, and you'll see them in our new movie, Pursuit, The Search for Bigfoot. I've got to tell you, this has been an intriguing story, a damn good intriguing story. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen, this is real. This is the stuff that's been dreamt up. This is stuff that actually happened and is going on now. And the reason why I wanted to bring this up tonight and have the people who were involved, I wanted you to hear it firsthand, okay? And I'm going to tell you something, Theron, and this is from the bottom of my heart. When we came to you, we came to you with an open heart, and we came to you as part of our family as we gained your trust and as we broke bread together. I think you know that because we broke a lot of bread together, didn't we?
Sure did. You like that southern cuisine, right?
Well, I like that house that they made into a restaurant. I forget where they just go and give a donation.
Peggy's.
What's it called?
Peggy's. I hear after you came to Mississippi and back, I think you got some of that southern twang.
Well, call it what you want. I can just tell you this. The people were humble. The people were giving of themselves. The people were genuine. And I think you're right. I think you're right. I think that they don't know, and they're just hearing it from one side. I think what we need to do is for you act as our spokesperson to get the cooperation from council.
Yeah.
And then you know what? We'll be back there in the jiffy. My boys are ready to go, okay?
Oh, yeah.
I know that you've got a hot spot there. Nobody knows it more than I. My poor guy, Bill, okay, mm-hmm. I worry about this guy, and I'll tell you why.
Right.
Bill is probably one of the most gentlest people you ever meet in your life, probably one of the most kindest people in your life, and he's been taken advantage of in his life, you know. You give him a sob story, if he's got 10 or... he'll give you 5, okay? But the key to this whole thing is he's been bitten. And when I tell you bitten, when he set his own cameras, when he baited the own area right there, when he saw this lair, when he saw that image that he got, and the remnants that were left the next day, he freaked. He says, "That's it. I want one of these things for study. We need to do the best our thing, best." Whatever we got in our bag of tricks to take this thing and capture it, i.e., a cage, a net, whatever, a tranquilizer gun, which don't work, we've got them to prove it. But it needs to be there for the people, okay? And we're willing, my team is willing to work with the Choctaw Nation.
Okay, well, I'll...
You guys were out there for a week, your own fishing game, camped out there, got nothing.
Yeah.
Apparently they didn't know what they were doing, did they?
Well, you know, what hurt me with them was we all looked at the video of the creature, a real-life creature, and the guy says, that's a bear. But, you know, bears, we don't have brown bears here in Mississippi, and...
Let's differentiate between oranges and apples here, okay? Ladies and gentlemen, the footage that he's talking about is somebody in his family that took with his phone. Has nothing to do with the incident that we're talking about. Ours was the stills. We had stills. He had video that was taken by the phone. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. So I don't want everybody to misconstrue this story.
That was about 3 miles apart.
That's correct. Yes. Yes, you bet. Now, here's the point, Theron. You're the Native American. You've got somewhat of prominence on that land.
Yeah.
I believe with Mac's help, because you're the voice, he's not. You're the voice. I believe that in a short span of time, we could have something on an ongoing basis out there,
yeah.
And it would be best for the reservation, the council, and the people on the reservation, including ourselves and the people of Searching for Bigfoot, that we could make an alliance here.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I would believe within 3 to 6 months, we could capture one of these creatures and prove it to the world. And you know what? You guys have had, who brought the prominence about Bigfoot to you guys? Who was it, Theron?
Me?
You did. You did.
You brought you over here, didn't I?
You were the start. You bet. You were the starting factor. You got us there, okay? And then what happened?
I'll tell you what. When people saw that Searching for Bigfoot was in town, I mean, I've never experienced people with their own encounters and sightings, and they just started spilling out, you know. And they're still, I'm still getting calls, and I'm still getting people telling me that they saw something. They seen, they had an encounter. They saw the creature. You know, I still get them once, twice every week, you know. So, yeah, people are more aware now.
Yes, go ahead.
Wasn't that a game and fish guy or a police officer, one of the two, told us when they were camping with their family they saw a creature?
That was the police officer.
That's right.
There were two of them.
Gotten there. That's what got us so excited.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I truly believe, guys, I got to tell you straight up, you know, with the right people and the right way that everybody could sit down and talk, there could be a happy medium. But it has to be instigated by one of their own, and that's you, Theron. So I'm going to say nothing more about that. The ball is in your court. Let's see what you can do with it.
Yeah. All righty. I'll get to work on it.
The runs between Rick and Hardstone because of the family and friends and us too. And I know it puts him on the spot, but he has been very straight with me, and he's brave, as one of the bravest people I've ever known to get out there and without a gun or anything. And he's going for it all the way.
And thank you for your input on that, Mac. You know, we have Anthony from Virginia out there, and why don't you chime in with us, Anthony? You out there?
Hey, Tom.
How you doing, my friend?
Hanging in there, right?
Good.
Everybody over there is doing well.
Give us a little update. What's going on over there in your area?
Okay. Real quick, I was talking with Marco Bill about one of the dads that I became friends with on my daughter's softball team. And started to explain to me, you know, about certain things that have been going on in his house that have been going on for the past couple of years, you know, saying that he knows that something is out there. He's like, because just about every time he goes to work and goes to his vehicle, he hears, you know, something knocking on the trees. And you know, as he's explaining these things, you know, I just let him keep going, and he just kept saying, he says, you know, I never seen anything, but I think it might be one of them Bigfoot creatures, because he took a portion of his property and made like a little baseball field for his kids. And so that area is cleared up. There's no grass, you know. And he said one day it was raining, and it was like really, really muddy out there. And he had saw some footprints there that he said that was, you know, they were just too far apart, you know. He said that he almost had to jump from one footprint to the next footprint to try to keep up with the stride of those imprints that were there, you know. But he never, you know, once they went into the grassy area, he didn't know which way it went after that. And after a while of him explaining the weird things that he was experiencing, I told him, I said, well, I just happened to have an interest in Bigfoot. And, you know, and I started to tell him some basic things that I had learned when I had first started hearing and seeing some things. And, you know, and I just started talking about tree formations. And he's like, well, you know, there's a whole bunch of what you just described in the woods. You want to go see? And so I said, sure, you know. Let the kids play in the pool, and we went off into the wooded area where he was, and there was, you know, tree formations, a lot of those arch trees and stuff, and definitely evidence that they've been around. We were, I was looking down on the ground and, you know, kind of looking at the trees there, and I kind of noticed one tree was, you know, had like normal debris on one side of it, and the other side, you know, was kind of cleared up. And I said, you know, this is probably a tree somebody's, you know, just, you know, playing peekaboo behind, you know, or just trying to hide behind it, you know, because it's kind of cleared up right here. We started looking at different trees, and definitely we were seeing some imprints in the ground, and, you know, which could likely have been tracks, but, you know, again, this was on top, you know, it was just set down and pressed on, you know, it was just debris being pushed into the ground. But there was one tree that we found that was cleared, and we saw clear as day footprint right there. And it was about 18 inches, and you can clearly make out a heel and five toes, you know. And I told him, I said, you have to stock up on Placer Paris, because this is something that, you know, you want to, you know, taking a picture is not enough. You got to make the cast out of it. So,
talking about cast, you still got the first one we made by you?
Oh, you know I do. So
I'm glad. Thanks for sharing with us. I just wanted to make sure you got your 2 cents in. And by the way, Swede, are you still out there?
I am.
You know, would you do me a favor and keep it within 3 minutes? Tell the story about when you pulled that trigger in defense there in Arkansas when Rocky missed his cooler.
Well, we got the cooler. The day we had the cooler up in the tree, and it had some fruit and stuff in it at our spot, and we had black bears visit in the night and hogs and things. And the next morning when we got up, the cooler was gone. While we were there, I had walked off to go use the bathroom there. After seeing that, we kind of discussed that it was gone. We thought maybe the rope broke or whatever. It was broke all right. Paracord pulled in two. It's 550-pound cord. Busted. Rocky and myself both, we noticed some footprints right there, right in camp, walked right up to it, pulled that thing down, took it away, never made any noise. We woke up many times with bears and hogs and everything else. Anyway, we set up the next night to see if it would come back, and we set up some perimeter stuff and this, that, and the other. Rocky was on one side of the camp, and I was on the other side of the camp. Of course, we never camp with a fire. About three-quarter, it was kind of interesting, that young lady that was on there earlier was talking about that three-quarter moon. That's about what it was that night for us, too. You could see a little bit, and it was pretty still. A little bit of breeze, not too much. I saw a figure moving up to the clearing on the south side of our campsite there. I was probably 35 yards away, 25, 35, somewhere. I don't remember the exact number. It wasn't too far, though. This thing was, we had set up a perimeter thread at as high as Rocky could reach there, 7-8 feet, something like that, high. We strung it between trees all around where we could kind of see if something came through, if we dozed off or whatever, up high. Anyway, this creature, I say it's a creature. It looked like a shadow. It was big in body girth, pretty thick and tall. And it came right to the side of the clearing, right to our camp, and stood there for 15 minutes. It never moved. And anybody that knows anything, like you got a 10-second thing when you see a deer before you can even make the decision whether or not you're going to even shoot it. 10 seconds seems like a long time. 15 minutes of total stillness. Couldn't believe how still it was standing there. And then finally, it started to kind of turn and walk away, or kind of turn kind of my way, kind of came that way, and I thought, okay, this is it. So I had already drawn down on this thing with my handgun, and I fired at it, and I thought that I had probably hit it, and it took off out of there. And I'm telling you that it covered, I couldn't see anything. I was blinded from the muzzle flash and couldn't hear anything, but Rocky was right there in just a second. He was over there, and he said, what's wrong?
Amazing story. I've heard you tell it a few times before. It's just as interesting today as the first time you told me. Okay, I'm going to open it up for everybody for the next 5 minutes. Anybody has any questions, chime in right now.
I have a question for the guy that was just on. That you say it stood there for a good 15 minutes like it had no fear whatsoever, and then they disappear so fast. I've had an experience with hearing calls going over hills from the top of where I was. Were there any calls or any broken branches in its path that you could track?
Well, we did do some tracking. and we tracked it actually.
Yeah, we tracked for several days.
Yeah, we were on it for several days actually, and we stayed. I mean, I know it was ahead of us, like Ren Rocky said, but we stayed with it to the point of total exhaustion. I mean, and we covered some ground. I'm talking, I don't know, what do you think, Rocky? Probably 10 miles?
Well, we started out about midnight Sunday, and I didn't make it home till about 2 o'clock the following Wednesday.
Yeah, we were.
And all of that time, we didn't sleep.
We never came back to camp. We just took our survival camp with us, and we took off and we stayed on this thing, and we actually did keep up with. Never found any blood.
Yeah.
And after all of the tracking, we come up and determined that I had killed a big. Well, I killed a young hickory nut tree right at the right beside him where he had turned to leave the camp. I assassinated a hickory nut tree.
Yeah. Now, what can I ask one more question? When you were tracking them, did you have the impression that it was doubling back and possibly watching you?
Well, there was a lot of
the last time we went out.
Yeah, this is funny.
The last time me and the Swede went out, we tracked one all the way in after about a five mile stretch. We came back on our own trail, and when we came back on our own trail, there was a trail that had followed us. So yeah, we have been tracked.
Yeah, we've been. We hadn't got to talk about that, but we actually took some ribbons and we were in some ground we hadn't been at, and come back up and seen that ribbon, and we had actually went in a large, I mean, I'm talking mile circle, and come back up and actually had been tracked ourselves, basically.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Pretty amazing stuff, huh, Lynn?
That you brought it
up. Yes, it is.
Yeah, hold on, guys. Is there anybody else that'd like to put their 2 cents in? Bill? Mac? Ron? Jim?
Well, I just want to say that these creatures are still messing around my mama's house, and yeah, I think somebody needs to come out here and investigate.
I heard something behind his mama's house down there. I was down there. I did hear something walking around, something really big. But it was totally impossible. Bill Coffey couldn't make a footprint to save his soul out there.
So what are you saying? I'm a fat boy?
No comment.
I'm just you was wearing sharper soled boots than me.
I got one.
Hey, Rocky, I made a great discovery. Did you know that you do not have to have a parachute to skydive? No, but you need a parachute to skydive twice.
I have one question out there.
Because you can just skydive without a parachute, and at the end you die.
There you go. I think General Giant chimed in. Go ahead. You got a question?
It's not really so much of a question. It's about what Tom made earlier about Cherokee Nation to the fella he was talking to out there. Tom's not out there to do anything harmful or anything like that. Matter of fact, Tom's got a lot of Native Americans all over the United States that helped Tom actually help him with some of this research. So if I would put anybody or would want somebody to come on down, and I would rather it be Tom instead of anybody else.
That's very kind of you, Mr. Coffin. I appreciate that. And I think that the Ron and Mac – probably believe and are on the same thought waves that you're on. Ladies and gentlemen, yep. This has been an exciting night, an enthralling show. Miss Calabash, wherever you are, sleep well. Kudos and salutations. Till next time, America.
Good night, Mark.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests. and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they die. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legends, tales, and facts. When you brought them together,